Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Ralph Segunda to the broadcast. Ralph is the former Group Vice President and Chief Information Officer of General Motors. Since his retirement in 2009, Ralph has been the managing partner of UST Global and serves on the investment advisory board of Lead Edge Capital, as well as chairman of the customer advisory board at iRise. He's also a senior advisor to the CEO of Elastic Outreach and serves as a member of the H. John Hines III Business College Dean's Advisory Board at Carnegie Mellon University. Between 1994 and 2013, Ralph served on various other boards as well, including Covisint, CompuWare, Handelman Company, and Sedalia Corporation. Prior to his tenure at GM, Ralph served as Vice President and Chief Information Officer at Bell Atlantic Corporation. He also spent 21 years at Texas Instruments Incorporated prior to his time at Bell Atlantic. In 1989, he was appointed Vice President of Information Systems and Services and Chief Information Officer. 2 years later, in 1991, he added the responsibility of Vice President and General Manager of Texas Instruments Enterprise Systems Business Unit, an external software systems integration business supplying information products and services to the Fortune 500. Ralph's won numerous awards, including being named Information Week's 2002 Chief Information Officer of the Year, as well as being named to CIO Magazine's prestigious Hall of Fame in 2007. Ralph holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Computer Science from the University of Missouri, Rolla, and a Master's degree in Electrical Engineering from the University of Texas. I recently caught up with Ralph by phone, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 4, largely, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed his rise and role as CIO, his role as CIO on the board of other companies, the advice he'd offer other IT executives who'd wish to consider following in his footsteps, as well as a variety of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open-source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Well, Ralph Segunda, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Well, my honor to be a part of this with you, Peter.
Thank you so much, Ralph. Ralph, I wanted to talk to you about your experience, among other things, as a board-level chief information officer. You retired as a CIO nearly 5 years ago, but during your time as a CIO of multiple organizations, you served on the boards of several corporations, and you continue to do so now. And I wanted to go back to one of your early, I believe even your first board experience with a company called Sedalia Corporation while you were CIO of Bell Atlantic. What I find at least so intriguing about this is how long ago this was, that it was at a time when almost no CIOs were being asked. I mean, frankly, there's still a relative paucity of CIOs on boards of companies, but back then especially, it would certainly have seemed to be that much more unusual. And I wonder, you know, what was the rationale, if you can recall, of their asking, and what was your rationale for accepting the offer to join the board of an organization?
Well, Sedalia was a telecommunication software company, and at that time I was in the telecommunication business, so it was a nice fit where clearly you want to add value to a board that you're going to, and as well you want to learn from it. It gave me that opportunity. They wanted me to come and be part of it. It had an international flair because it also was owned to some extent by Telecom Italia and Bell Atlantic. And I think it was interesting. It was the time of deregulation of the telecommunication industry. And so new things were being invented, things were being done, and usually that's what I look for.
You obviously continued as CIO of General Motors very famously and had quite a successful run there. And it was at that time that you joined a number of other boards. I wonder, as no doubt from such a meaningful perch for such a large organization, and as a great number of organizations at that point would be interested in your counsel and joining the boards of their organization, how did you choose which ones to join and which ones not to join?
Well, it was interesting. Clearly, there were a number of boards that wanted me to join, but GM, during the 13 years that I was at General Motors, had an overall rule that you could not be on a board of directors. But I'll explain how I did end up being on one. So any of the senior management team or that were not allowed to be on a board of directors. So most of all the boards that I was asked to be on, I had to turn down just because of that. In one case, Handelman Corporation, which was a logistics supply chain company, there was an exception. And the story of the exception was interesting. There was a past president of General Motors that was on this board of directors of Handelman. And he thought that they needed somebody like me. And truthfully, I didn't know him very well at all, if at all. And he went to the CEO of General Motors at that time and asked if they could approve or let me interview for a board position on that company. They thought I could add a lot to it. And I talked to the CEO, and there was a role that you couldn't do that, but he said that he would go and discuss it with the board of directors. And luckily, the board of directors permitted me to go be on that one board, and I was the only member of the officers in the company on any board of directors. So it was an interesting venture, and it was kind of nice that a past senior officer that I really didn't know came looking for me to be on that board.
Can you talk a bit about the advantages that during your time as CIO that you garnered from having the opportunity to weave yourself into the strategic fabric of a number of organizations? What did it bring to you in your job as CIO that may have been nuanced or different from not having that experience?
Well, clearly, first, you have to be a business-driven CIO, so you have to have strong technology capability. But any board is going to be looking for business, financial background, as well as technology. So one, it's enjoyable because it really puts you in the middle of actually the execution of business, the profit and loss side of a company, and really learn how to help and coach a corporation without managing it. Because truthfully, on a board of directors, you don't really manage anything. You're there to coach and represent the stockholders, but there's a management team that is in place. If you don't like the management team, you have to find a way to maybe change it. But effectively, it's your responsibility to coach, make it better, and really give you a different mindset. You're working for a company, General Motors, that's very monstrous, and then you're going to maybe be a board member of a smaller company. So you get to see the more integral aspects of it. But the way you become good in technology and business is seeing many different verticals, industries, different types of companies. And I think all of them make you better because you're really trying to service the end customer. And so by learning more about customers at different companies, you tend to be better at what you do.
And I wonder, why, in your opinion, have there even to this day been relatively few CIOs who've garnered the invitations that you had so many of? What is it about a CIO's experience, or perhaps in some case lack of experience, that has not lent itself so well to board membership, generally speaking?
Well, I think my background's a little different. The first 20 years of my career, I was involved in running businesses that specifically were technology businesses, defense businesses, all wrapped around computerization. But the first 20 years was running businesses, profit and loss, designing products. So I had a tremendous foundation. I mean, I started off working on one of the world's largest computing systems from a design viewpoint, later on selling it, military computers, running my own information technology segment at Texas Instruments and in the marketplace, serving the Fortune 500. So one, that was different, and I did that before I became a CIO. The second 20 years of my career was a CIO at three companies. But in all cases, and one, honestly, I didn't know what a CIO did. In the businesses I had, you never thought you were really already being served by the IT organization. But, you know, I was just asked by the CEO of Texas Instruments and the prior CIO to move into the CIO position as well as running a business at the same time. And I got to learn both of those, and I saw the customer side, I saw the actual information technology sales side, and I also saw how you implement it in a corporation. And so it gave me that great visibility, and then I went into three very different industries. I mean, I was in the semiconductor defense business, then in telecommunication, then to automobiles and that. Now, clearly, I'm on my, my next 20 years of my career, and the last five has been totally back on the selling of information technology, the design of information technology, not a CIO. So I'm coming back to home where I started. But I think that mixture is very, very critical, that everyone that even thinks of being on a board of directors needs to have both a business and a technology background, and the CIO must have that if they're going to be constructive being a board member.
This harkens back to a theme that I've been speaking an awful lot about of late, which is this subservient language a lot of IT leaders use of, you know, IT versus the business, or even I think we're still referring to colleagues as customers. And it's so interesting through several of your answers, the, just the degree to which you've been cognizant of and the degree to which you have served and worked with end customers of the businesses that you've been a part of. It sounds like you've never had that sort of disconnect where IT was less than the rest of the organization, but rather a true contributor to the value that the company brings.
You're correct. I wouldn't want to just be a technologist. I started out, and I always wanted to help companies change and improve. You're only part of it as a CIO, but you want to contribute in that way. A lot of CIOs have started in the technology area specifically, really probably have never sold information technology. They've been more a technologist in data centers and things of that sort. So as they come up, and there's nothing wrong with that, that might be a great need for a company. But they have a harder time understanding the business ramifications without having that background. Now, at the same time, if you're a pure business leader without information technology understanding, you have problems as well. So you have to have both.
Since you've retired from GM in 2009, you've, as we've talked about, been very active in a variety of companies. And I wonder, how do you divide your time and attention between each of the organizations that you're now a part of?
It's not easy. One of the great things is when you get to a point of retirement, you get to really look for things that you want to do that is enjoyable, but that you're giving something back to businesses or society or anything of that sort. So first, I look for those things and how that might fit into my environment. Then the next thing is, how much do you want to do? And you think you want to be somewhat retired, but I hate to say today I'm probably 100% committed. And so when you're working with multiple companies, at this time 6-7 companies that I work with consistently, you have to make sure that you're given all value. So you have to make sure you have enough time to meet those requirements. And I spend a lot of time doing that. Sometimes that means that you have to walk away from an advisory board or a public board or something like that, because maybe you've already contributed what you think you can. There are other new opportunities to go to, but you really have to give the best that you can at any given time and have the best opportunities in doing it. It's a tremendous balancing act. What you end up is working for yourself versus just one company. And when you work for yourself, then it's your reputation of supporting those companies. And you always want to have a good reputation at the end.
You know, as you mentioned, you were the CIO of three major corporations, including at one point CIO of the Fortune 1 company, the biggest company in the land. And now you serve a lot of companies that work with CIOs as customers to them. And as people who are selling to the CIO community, you also have a variety of forums you participate in where you're counseling and otherwise interacting with chief information officers. I wonder, as somebody who's been on all different sides of the table in this equation, and somebody who's held the role, somebody who continues to counsel those who do, what do you think of the state of the chief information officer today?
I think the world is changing so quickly today. I mean, if you look at a CIO responsibility of 25 years ago when the internet was founded, today the overall cycle time that a CIO has to get something done is just multiple factors difference today than they were before. So you have to be quick on your feet. I think you have to have both the business and the technology environment, and the technology is a business itself. I mean, if you looked at the major corporations like Google today or Facebook, you look where the wealth is, it's coming out of the information technology industry, where 20, 30, 40 years ago was other industrial companies. So it's much harder being a CIO, I think, today. I think you have different types of CIOs today, and it depends on what a company needs at a given time. You have very technical CIOs. They enjoy computing centers and consolidation of them and the cloud and other things of that sort. Then you have other CIOs that are more involved into analytics and analyzing information about a company or customers to try to direct their products in a particular area. So one, the need at companies are different. And I think there's some amazing CIOs, and then there, I think there's, as usual, some that struggle as these companies change. Today, it's moved from cost reduction to revenue generation. Years from now, it'll go back to maybe changing processes in the company versus analytics. I think the CIO has a difficult time, and they're coming from many different places. The difference today is most of them are growing up with information technology as a part of their everyday life. That was not what I grew up with. I mean, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have the internet. Today, they're going through school with all of that. So when they come through, they have a greater understanding of the sensitivity of the customer. The downside is so does their boss. The CEO grew up with it as well. And so it's a difficult time, and I'd say it's no different than any time in the past. There are great CIOs, and there's some that are struggling. And finding the right one is very important to match up with what a corporation needs at any given time.
One of the things that I find so intriguing about you, Ralph, is with all the CIOs that I come into contact with, it seems like not a lot of time passes until I meet a new CIO who was once a colleague of yours. Again, you're having spent time at such large, important IT departments and running those departments, you've had a great number of former colleagues of yours who've gone on to become CIOs of major corporations themselves. It's kind of like one of these maps that plots the number of coaches that came out of Bill Walsh's family tree, so to speak. And I wonder if you've ever built sort of your own CIO family tree to think about the number of leaders who you've touched in some way and who've gone on to success in a variety of different fields.
I personally have not. I know that there's a lot. There have been other organizations, recruiting firms, and some other research firms that tell me today that over 30 active CIOs in today work for me. And then there are many, many, many more that have retired and done other things. So you have to be proud that you have helped people in their career and helped them to move on to bigger things versus just staying reporting to you as a technology leader in one company. They go off and change many, many other companies. So that's always enjoyable. You have to make that happen to feel good. And it's not only CIOs, it's CEOs of companies, and it's head of IT companies and things of that sort. That's always the excitement. And as you get maybe a little older like me, you look back and you want to be able to see that.
Ralph, I also want to ask you, as somebody, again, who's had reason to think about technology for some time and now advises a number of organizations building leading technology, what are some trends that particularly excite you as you look in your own personal crystal ball out to the future? What excites you as you look forward in the world of technology?
Well, it's a pretty exciting time because change is everything, and it's a nice time because we're coming off of a period of during the financial crisis throughout the world of cost reduction and trying to save to one of now innovation, growth of businesses again, which really drives a great deal of innovation of technology. If you look at what I'm seeing in industry now, mobility is driven by the customer and having 24/7 access to products and services is very different than years ago. And having the devices that let you do this mobility and serve your customers, doesn't matter whether you're a manufacturing company, a financial services, a retail company, your customers have access to you almost constantly. and you really have to come across with having concern for them and having the products to serve their needs. So that's one. The next one is clearly the explosion of information and data. We built business processes, we've optimized them at companies, and the differentiator now is how do you use that information from those processes to make your company better and to serve your customers better. And analytics around the big data concept is really being driven by many, many corporations at this point in time. Then the cloud, the aspect that information technology is just not within the walls of your company. I know there are still CIOs that would like to push it all within their company walls, but I have to let them know that that will never happen because there's information and information technology assets and systems all over the place that you're looking at to effectively leverage. And so you have this whole world now of access to knowledge and understanding and different information technology, different systems, the internet. I mean, we don't control the internet within inside the walls of our company. It's a different world. So this whole cloud, whether it's fairly private within your own company or it's external, and how to make that all work. And really, we're at an immature period, but over decades, it will become more and more important of how we integrate that. With that, though, goes issues of compliance and security. And those are hot issues because now everybody has this cloud environment and they're accessing things outside of their company and they're accessing things inside their company and they still have to meet legal compliance requirements. They have to really protect customer information. That's a big area. And the last one, I think people are starting to ask, what's the next generation of computing look like? We've gone through mainframe computing, and we've gone through distributed computing, and we've gone through PCs, and we've gone through handheld devices. What's the computer of the future look like? Not only in form factor, but how is it fabricated? Is it silicon? Is it something else? What's the speed of those computers to handle all this processing power? Is there going to be another discontinuity over the next number of years and finding a new world of computing that changes? I think those are the things I see right now as I talk to CIOs and heads of IT companies. Those are the major drivers that I see.
And it's interesting, Ralph, as I think about the list of things you just listed off, all makes so much sense. It exemplifies just how challenging the role of CIO is to be contemplating each of those. There's innovation and revenue opportunities on the one hand. There's the need to balance cost cutting on the others, and some of that's represented in some of what you talked about with the cloud, for instance, and some other infrastructure type changes. And then there's the major issues of security and risk mitigation. And so the number of hats that a CIO must wear in order to seize the future and be a part of a lot of these trends that are so meaningful that no doubt are going to be important for corporations for many years to come. As you pointed out earlier, the role of CIO is only becoming more complex as a result.
Exactly. And that's why I think you will see this board position requirements or CIOs moving to these board positions become more and more a requirement because of the complexity of technology and the complexity of business. So I think the opportunity for CIOs that really have great business and technology understanding is really going to be important as time goes on. I think there's still corporations and recruiters for boards that really don't understand where do you put this technology background guy or gal. But I think it's being discussed immensely by recruiting firms and corporations creating boards.
And Ralph, just as one point of recap, if I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds like for those who wish to follow in your footsteps and have roles in advising a whole range of companies on their boards, it does require that business acumen. You talked about the importance of your having run businesses, of understanding the P&L, of understanding how the financials work and the investments you're undertaking, and ultimately understanding the value that IT is creating as a CIO. So it sounds to me that one of the key pieces of advice is either spending some time running businesses or getting more involved in those, or at a minimum, becoming more cognizant of these kinds of principles because they're sort of the entry point or the foundational step you need to have in place in order to get the invitation in the first place.
I think you're 100% right. I think you have to have that business knowledge. I would never recommend anybody to follow my footsteps because I've made hopefully some good things in life. I did well, and in other cases might not have done as well. But I think you have to live your own world and go down your right path, but you better have business and technology understanding. If you want to get involved in other corporations and boards and advisory boards, people are looking for someone that will help them have a better corporation. And they're not going to ask for somebody that's an expert in data centers. Normally, that's not what they're going to ask. They go find a consultant to do that. They're going to ask to have someone that will help their bottom line, how to make their customers more satisfied, and how they can leverage technology to do that. And if you don't link those two together from a business perspective, you're probably not adding a whole lot of value.
Ralph Segunda, thank you so much for joining us today on the Forum on World Class IT, for sharing your many great thoughts and experiences. Congratulations on a very successful first two series of 20 years, and I hope this third 20-year period is of equal success. No doubt it will be.
Hey, it's been great talking to you, Peter, and hopefully this has some benefit for the listeners.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat is a catalyst in communities of customers, contributors, and partners creating better technology the open source way. Connect to an ecosystem of innovation at redhat.com today to learn more. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.